Hello, and welcome to Open Finance, the podcast that believes the future of financial services is open and brought to you by Finastra. I'm your host, Emily Nicole, the technology editor at CityAM, and today we are joined by Karina Govindi, Director of Diversity, Equity and Inclusion at Google EMEA, and Sharon Doherty, Chief People Officer at Finastra. On this episode, we're going to discuss how fintech companies can do a better job of promoting intersectional diversity. Welcome to Sharon and Karina. So just to get started in the broader aspect, why does diversity and inclusion matter in fintech and to businesses?
Yeah, so look, I don't think it's much different than most other industries in reality. So, you know, why do people pay attention to diversity and inclusion? So I think we all want access to 100% of the talent pool. I think if you look at what most CEOs are saying, they say skill shortages is critical for them. Most organisations are trying to be more innovative. And I think, again, the research shows if you have a broader mix of people working together, you'll get more innovation. I think most people are trying to figure out how they serve their customers better, and having people either building products or trying to talk, engage with customers about those products that are representative of the people that you're trying to serve, I think helps. And I think, you know, we're in 2020 and to not be trying to have work environments that are balanced, you know, just doesn't feel very progressive. And if we just sort of focus in on financial services, fintechs, you know, these are big, important industries. If you look at financial services, you know, it's a 20 plus trillion industry. If you come into the UK, which is where we are, you know, 130 billion a year industry. So they have a big impact on global economics. If you look at issues like the unbanked or the underbanked, just short of 2 billion people in the world are in that space, and financial services, fintechs can really solve that world problem. So you've got an important industry with some important global issues to try and resolve in the middle of a massive disruption. If you've got all of that to do, then you would be crazy not to try and have the broadest group of people helping you with that challenge. Mm. Yeah.
And so, of course, within that, I mean, today we want to focus particularly on an area of diversity, which is intersectionality. Karina, do you want to give us some idea of, you know, what does that mean? Why is that valuable to organisations?
Yeah, I mean, intersectionality, if I think we think about the actual phrase, it was coined actually over 30 years ago by Kimberly Crenshaw, and she was looking at the oppression of African American women at the time and coined that phrase. So whilst actually organisations have been thinking about it more recently, you know, this does go back away. And really what it looks at is the overlapping identities that we have. You know, we have multiple identities and that we layer those on. And what really happens is the layering of those identities can lead to actually compounding inequality. And so as organisations, we really need to think about not just the impact of one dimension of diversity, but it from an intersectional approach.
Mm. And from your experience at Google as well, while you've been there, what are the benefits of implementing diversity initiatives across these different areas of the community, so women, LGBT, ethnicities, that kind of stuff, and also across different business functions? How do you oversee how it goes across the entire company?
Google's had, I think, probably quite a progressive approach on intersectionality going back a few years. So to name a few examples, when you look at the diversity report that's published externally, the data is looked at from an intersectional approach. So you can look at the intersection between race and gender, for example, and across all groups be able to understand, well, what's the representation of those different groups? What's the hiring? So what rate are we hiring? What's the attrition? And also looking at engagement levels. So what's the experience of different groups? So, you know, the experience of, you know, Black women, for example, is going to be different to the experience of Latin women or white women. And so really understanding from a data perspective, what does that tell us about these different groups? And then to move to really looking at programs to support. So, you know, as an example, Google ran just this year 5 different programs for intersectional groups. So particularly women, so women of colour. So, you know, Black women summits, Latin women summits, Asian women summits, etc. And what those do is, of course, they bring together communities and, you know, this sense of belonging, personal and professional development. But more importantly, they also help programmatic interventions. And because whilst the, you know, some of the experiences of these groups can be common, the way in which they experience it can be quite different. And so bringing those communities is really important. And I think lastly, I'd say it helps bring leadership attention. So when you really kind of dissect from an intersectional point of view, you need to help leaders understand actually not not just to look at a single dimension, but the compounding impact, and therefore to look at their teams and their leadership style in that way.
And Sharon, as well, you've done a lot of work at Finastra, not just with, you know, the more identifiable intersectional groups of, you know, women from different backgrounds, but also LGBT and the more hidden groups, I guess you could say, those people who may not want to be out and proud or may not want to be as open with why they might be different or might need more attention. How do you manage that when you're running the business?
Yeah, so look, I mean, I've been with Finastra now for just under a year. And when I joined, there was already some good work going on. So, well done the team that had already been on the journey. But it was very focused on women. Yeah, and if you look, that's where most people start. And if I go back to my time in Vodafone, I'm sure Google's the same. Most people start there, or historically started there, because it's the most obvious. And frankly, I think the area where there is most external pressure. And when I joined Finastra, you know, not only did I say, OK, you know, let's broaden our approach. So for sure it's women, but let's look at multi-generation. Let's look at folks with special abilities. Let's look at culture. Let's look at LGBTQ. Very quickly broadened the agenda. But I think the thing that was most powerful was actually we did a wraparound that said, we want everyone to be yourself. And if I'm honest, that was a fairly simple, easy thing to say. But the impact that that had on so many of our employees, so Black LGBTQ women, they suddenly felt like there was a permission to not be in a box, to not be a woman, a Black person, an LGBTQ person, but actually to bring all of those things together and say, you for who you are, we really value you and we want you to do your best work in this environment. And so I think the language we use and the signals that we give really can empower and make people feel like they really want to be in your organisation and belong in your organisation or not. Yeah, and I think, as senior people or as policymakers in organisations, we have a big responsibility and also an opportunity to really, you know, help our workforces, come into the workplace and feel like we want them there to do their best work.
So then what does it look like when you have intersectionality or even a lack of it playing out in a modern workplace?
I think there are, you know, a few things that you are likely to see. So I think if you are in a workplace where you have either just got women only networks, yeah, so that would be a clue that probably you need to broaden your agenda. Or when you go to women's networks, it's only women there. And it's always interesting for me as I go around Finastra. I was in Israel a few weeks ago. And what was fantastic as we were there in Tel Aviv, at a meeting that was about women at Finastra, I would say about a third of the audience were men. And I actually, we're having a good Q&A type session. And I actually sort of said to the men, you know, why are you here? And it was fantastic, yeah. I mean, you know, them talking about they had female role models, they wanted to figure out how they could support women in their teams, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, that just felt like, okay, this feels like a more intersectional group, yeah, rather than an isolated group. So I think that what you will see if you're not thinking more broadly is either lack of focus on some groups or isolation, which I think is not helping you move things forward.
And maybe just to build on that, one of the groups, you know, that if we think about the impact of intersectionality, some of the work that Stonewall's done is when they look at lesbian women, they talk about, you know, the double glass ceiling. So not just mm-hmm. having to hit a glass ceiling because you're a woman, but actually the impact of being a lesbian woman on the workplace. And that's a really good example of the impact of intersectionality that we have to be aware of.
And more specifically then, why should leaders in fintech companies or financial services be interested in intersectionality and embracing that within their company?
So I think we have to be upfront and say that both in financial services and in technology and in fintech, that I think is an intersect between those two, we have still got a significant journey to go on. And you can sort of see that both industries are struggling to get beyond 20% of women in senior management roles. And that's even before you then look at culture or LGBTQ, et cetera, et cetera. So I think generally, as industries, we've got more to do. The thing I really like about intersectionality is that, you know, some of the reasons why maybe the talent pools are less. And let's just say that's true. May not be, but let's just say it is. What intersectionality does is it stops an intense focus on women, which at a certain point, I think, can actually start to disengage other groups. And it says, let's broaden it. Yeah, and I think this was both Karina and I's experience in Vodafone. We'd gone so far, we'd got to about 25% of women in senior management, and we kept doing more and more and more. And actually, the organisation started to say, stop. Yeah, I mean, you know, just don't keep talking to us about women. And what we did was we broadened the agenda. And what that is, it turbo boosted the focus on women, but in a different way. And then it started to create a much broader dialogue in the organisation that actually meant the whole place felt more inclusive. You know, I was looking, 10% of fintechs are female-led. Yeah, so there are, you know, it's real, and that is not in fintech's interest, it's not in the world's interest to have this new area of technology not embracing a broader talent pool.
And so for both of you as well, do you think that government initiatives that have been put in place in the last few years, things like in financial services, we have the Women in Finance Charter, but there's also more broader efforts about trying to get more women onto the boards of FTSE 100 companies. Do you think those initiatives have helped as well, or is it all mainly the bread and butter of what you guys are doing inside your companies?
I mean, I think inclusion is a subject that all parts of society have to focus on. So it starts in the home, education, governments and companies. And I think all of us need to say this is something that we think is a good thing to move forward, and we all have to play our part. I think companies, particularly large companies, have a significant part to play in changing the narrative. And, you know, we saw that in Vodafone. We changed the narrative on maternity. We changed the narrative on domestic violence. Yeah, so we created an agenda that then the world had to respond differently to. So I think big companies particularly can move important agendas forward, but we've all got to hold hands and do it together.
And I think the thing that companies can do is look at it from a systemic point of view. So at every stage, there's an impact of bias that can seep in that then can impact an individual's experience. And I think companies have, you know, the opportunity to really dissect that and think about every stage in the process at which they are working with people to make sure it's as equitable as possible.
And so how do you think organisations can do a better job of educating their workforce on that and, you know, drive programmes that address unconscious bias or other things that can affect the initiatives that you're trying to implement?
So I think it really has to be a dual focus, one on the systemic activity. So, you know, really ensuring that systems and processes, which of course are created by people and therefore in themselves have bias, are analysed and dissected, and everything is done to try and de-bias those. And at the same time to work on human behaviour. And the reality is some of these biases are so deeply embedded, you know, right from birth. And so unravelling that can be very challenging. But that isn't to say that we shouldn't try. And so constantly raising awareness levels of leaders, making it okay to create an environment where people understand, you know, behaviours that may be happening that shouldn't be happening, and to feel confident to call those out. And there's a lot that needs to be worked on in parallel in order to move this forward.
And I mean, Sharon, as well, why do you think organisations aren't doing as much to focus on intersectionality? Is it because things like unconscious bias are just really hard to deal with?
I'm an optimist, yeah. So I think most people are broadly trying to do the right thing. Most workplaces, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of disruption, yeah, you know, technology, regulation, et cetera, that we've talked about. I think in the middle of that, I think folks have got their heads around diversity and inclusion. And I think most good organisations have a set of programmes that they're trying to figure out and get benefits from. And I think this idea of, you know, see it as a collective rather than separate areas that you have to focus on separately, I think it's just different. Yeah, I don't think it's yet understood in the same way as some of the other areas are. So, I think it's not understood sufficiently. I think it's an opportunity that leaders in financial services, in technology, in fintechs ought to be saying, OK, is there a third way that I can increase my focus on inclusion that just might help me get more people into my workplace, that more women, more people of colour, more LGBTQ, etc., and get them to feel like they can do their best work here. Let's try and get intersectionality on people's agenda, and I think it could be another turbo boost for the world trying to move this agenda forward.
And my experience with leaders is if you give them an insight into that intersectional world, that just helps with their understanding. So if they're not themselves having to deal with those layers of different identities, actually, you know, having them listen to, you know, employees who, you know, maybe Black women who describe some of the challenges they've gone through and their journey, and exposing them to the different types of intersectionality and the impact, I think will really help leaders to get on board and understand these different perspectives. Mm.
And what would be kind of one thing you'd say to a company leader right now is be like, this is something that you should do if you really want to understand the impact of this on your business?
I would honestly say listening. Listen with an open heart to people's experiences without judgment, because they will be different to your own. And with that open heart, I think they'll absorb that and be able to think about how they can act.
Yeah, look, I think it would be the same. You know, typically, if you're a leader, when you go around the world, you'll spend time with women, mostly, maybe some young graduates. And so you should ask yourself, who are you spending time listening to? I think probably not enough spend time listening to even the individual area, you know, LGBTQ or cultural differences. So I think you could broaden who you're listening to. And then within that, those groups, add in the layering, as Karina said. I think you should be inquisitive about who is interacting with your customers, who is building your innovation, and is it a balanced group? And I think as a leader, you should be inquisitive about whether your people policies are actually as inclusive as you think they might be. Because sometimes policies and processes in organisations are just what they have been forever. You know, we just recently looked in India at our insurance policies, and we said, actually, we're going to have same-sex insurance. And, you know, we ended up being one of the first companies in India to do that because it was just sort of there and nobody really looked at it. Yeah, so I would say be inquisitive, ask some questions about, do we have inclusive systems and processes in our people team.
And technology can really help support that. One of the things that Sharon and I worked on at Vodafone was looking at job adverts. And the assumption is, you know, we write job adverts and we think they will attract everyone. And the reality is that actually those job adverts are written by humans, you know, built with bias, and therefore attract, you know, a certain type of person. And so actually using technology to de-bias those job adverts, to remove jargon, to remove words that may appeal more to one gender, for example, than another, you know, really does lend itself to then, you know, outcomes of more, you know, attracting a sort of a more equal audience. And so all of these ways that technology can help are things that companies should be looking at.
Well, great. That's some good advice for everybody listening going forward. So today we've discussed what is intersectional diversity, how can it be implemented in the workplace, what are the benefits of doing that, things like unconscious bias and how to address them, and, you know, some tips for going forward. Thanks to Karina and Sharon for joining us today, and thanks to our listeners. If you'd like to find out more or to find out other podcasts, you can visit us at finastra.com or join in the conversation with the hashtag OpenFinance on Twitter, and you can follow us at FinastraFS.